broadcast may contain free thinking and open-minded discussion, ideas, skepticism, and adult subject matter. Topics will be discussed using adult language, sometimes gratuitously. Get ready to move the conversation forward. This ain't your granddad's news and comment show. This is I Doubt It Podcast with Brittany Page and Jesse Dalamore.
Welcome, friends, to the big show, episode 923 of I Doubt It Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse Dalamore, joined today by the afflicted by COVID, lovely, talented, scholarly Brittany Page.
Yeah, so we have masks on, and you can probably tell. I think I can hear it in my ears that it sounds differently.
I'm also bumping because I have like one of the duck bill masks.
Yeah, try not to bump.
It's bumping. It's bumping into the microphone.
We needed you to do that, so I'm glad that you did that for everyone, so they can have the true experience. So I have COVID.
Sense of humor still intact. That's good.
I tested positive for COVID after the Democratic National Convention. Jesse has not tested positive for COVID.
You also are sick, and yeah. I feel well.
Yeah, I started having symptoms yesterday. A sore throat, runny nose, and I started seeing a lot of people that were at the DNC with us posting about how they were testing positive for COVID. So I started to feel like it was only a matter of time. So there have been jokes made that COVID is actually the special guest since there was...
Is that right?
Yeah, because there was supposed to be a special guest, you know.
Yeah.
And everyone thought it was Beyonce... Even in the United Center during the Democratic National Convention, I went out to get, you know, a burger or something to eat. And in line, everyone was like, so is it going to be Beyonce? Is it going to be Taylor Swift and Beyonce? You know,
that's what I heard. That, yeah. Oh, Taylor Swift's plane landed in Chicago. It's going to be her, too.
Yeah. All the rumors were swirling. And then it was absolutely none of that. It's just that we all got COVID and it was a super spreader event.
Not for me so far.
Yeah, so we're wearing masks because hopefully Jesse will get lucky.
Yeah, we're like strangers in a grocery store checkout line.
Yeah.
Doing the podcast with masks on.
Yeah. So like I said, we were at the Democratic National Convention. We got invited. We got credentialed. And we were in a mad rush to leave. And I had planned a show that we were going to do the day that we were leaving, and things just didn't work out.
Well, we were going to leave on Monday, and we actually moved our flights up for certain events that were happening, and we ended up leaving on Sunday, and there was just no time.
Yeah, and so then we brought equipment to do a show while we were there, and...
You know, that's what doesn't feel good on me, is my goddamn back.
Mm.
I feel it's very fatigued and sore from hauling around double the gear that we didn't need and ended up not using at all.
Yeah. So we'll get into some of that, but I think we'll just kind of start with our broad takeaways of our experience at the DNC. And would you like me to go first?
Or yeah. You are you slow first? In my role, my bitch and complain role? Is that...
No, I just said, do you want to go first?
No.
You can start with all the bitching and moaning you want, if that's what you...
No, go ahead.
Okay, so I think overall it was a really positive experience. I feel really lucky for the opportunity to be there and witness history, and it was really exciting. It was cool to be in the room and see several different people that I admire. I got to see... Patti LaBelle came out on stage.
Amazing.
Wasn't even on the roster of speakers or performers, and they didn't even announce her name. She just walked out on the stage and started singing, and it was absolutely so moving, incredible.
Unbelievable. She's 80 years old, 80, and still has the vocal acuity and range and clarity and control of a 30-year-old.
Yeah.
It fucking... And we've seen a lot of aging artists. We've seen Steely Dan, Donald Fagen, mm-hmm. old, doesn't have like he used to, just normal. We've seen Earth, Wind & Fire 5, 6, 7 times. They're awesome, but, you know, not 30 years old anymore. Lionel Richie, he's missing a beat. Patti LaBelle, freak of nature. Crazy how good she was.
We also got to see Stevie Wonder, which was remarkable. And I know you're like, you guys went to a political convention, and all you're talking about is Stevie Wonder and Patti LaBelle.
Yeah, but it's Stevie Wonder and Patti LaBelle.
Yeah, so that was really moving. And,
oh, and yeah, Barack Obama, Michelle Obama.
Yeah. Given
Kamala Harris.
Also, just given the number of, or the amount of media that I consume to prepare this show and do YouTube stuff, it was really interesting to, you know, run into Manu Raju, and he was wandering around. I saw him every day, and people that I like from PBS, I saw, you know, all these different people that I'm just used to seeing on TV that I got to see. But there were some things that didn't go as well, and some things that we just didn't know. I mean, you have no way of knowing when you're going into something like this what it's going to be like, and it was very difficult to work. We did not have a specific assigned space to work, and so every day was kind of dedicated to trying to work and trying to find a place that we could do that in, and being unable to do so for a lot of the time. So it was really laborious trying to get in and out of United Center. Obviously, security is unlike anything I've ever encountered.
Almost spooky.
Yeah, I mean, the area around United Center is blocked off significantly. In order to get in and out, you're taking at least an hour of your day. It's going to be at least 30 minutes to walk into the perimeter, get through security, and then...
And that's if there's, like, almost no line.
Yeah, and then if there's a long line. Right. So there were just things that were difficult about the experience that we weren't prepared for. And it's not like that's unique to us. I mean, everyone around us in line, they had a separate security entrance for press, and people were carrying their cameras and all of their equipment. And,
as were we, yeah.
You know, it was just kind of, it was kind of a pain.
When I say spooky, by the way, it was, I don't know what kind of tech they got going on, but it's not from scanning and they know what order in line we are. Like, before you get there, you're walking up to the counter and there's a thing that's scanning your face or something. She's saying, Jesse, okay, yeah, go ahead. Way before she can read my name tag.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm dozens and dozens of feet away and she's already motioning me through.
Right.
It was crazy.
Right.
We were there credentialed under Creators for Kamala. And part of the problem that Brittany is talking about was, and also there's, I wasn't even going to talk about it, but there's been so many articles written in the New York Times and Wired Magazine. I think Politico did an article about it, that there seems to be, the media is taking exception with the fact that we were credentialed as content creators and not, excuse me, as journalists. And all of these articles are written like we were granted unprecedented access and offered interviews with surrogates and big name politicians. And if you read it, we were offered interviews. That just nothing happened with that.
Yeah, we were sent a link to, number one, the first round was to indicate our kind of wish list for who we would like to interview. And so we went big with that. They encouraged you to go big with your wish list. And then the second one was a little bit more targeted, where they wanted to know specifically what you would ask and specifically what you would talk to about the people that you had requested. And so we filled both of those out, and so did the hundreds of other creators that were credentialed. And I would say 99% of those creators said that they did not get a response to that,
yeah.
And that if they were able to secure an interview, it was from their own tracking people down, encountering people in the hallway, asking them to meet, and then trying to last minute kind of schedule something, either talking to them in the hallway or trying to get into the very limited studio space that was available for those that were credentialed.
Yeah, and studio space was also a problem. I was under the impression, I guess maybe falsely, we'll say, that there would be workspace, even when they talked about it. Well, we're going to have areas for you to work. And, you know, many of you know, the way we work is not like answering emails like you're in a cubicle in an office. I need a space to sit down and film myself. I need a place for lights. I need a place for a I need a place. And none of that was provided. There wasn't even a dedicated internet connection. And the reason I'm saying this is not bitching and complaining, although I'm a little butthurt about it. It's more pushing back against this media narrative, this corporate media narrative, that we were treated like rock stars, or we were treated unduly privileged in a way that they weren't, or something. There's like a they're like creating a battle between traditional corporate media and independent media that there need not be, because we weren't given a bunch of perks and special bullshit, unless they consider a sweatshirt that doesn't fit me because they didn't have my size and a coffee mug. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. So there's, and Jesse's being serious. I mean, if you're not in this space, you probably haven't seen these articles, but there's been, I mean, I don't know, probably a dozen at this point, articles about the war between quote-unquote traditional media and the content creators that were credentialed at the DNC. And there's a wide range of content creators that were credentialed. It wasn't just people who are active in the political space. It was also people who, like, have cooking shows, or, like, they are TikTok stars.
Fashion people.
Yeah, fashion stuff. Or, like, money influencer people. Like, it wasn't just politics. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So, it was overall, I would say, a good experience. Chicago was very beautiful. I was shocked. I have never been to Chicago. It was my first time in Chicago. I absolutely loved it. It was very windy. I know they call it the windy city, and boy, are they right. It is very accurate. Every time I would walk outside and have fresh lip gloss on my lips, I would be absolutely enraged as it would get stuck. My hair would get stuck to my lips. Very windy. So prepare yourself. If you're going to Chicago, it is not a joke. I'm not doing a Seinfeld bit. I really was just surprised that it was windy.
Who are these people? Yeah, it was a good time. Again, we definitely feel privileged and lucky to have gone. We did make some good contacts, had some great conversations, met some beautiful people, and we will hopefully be, you know, doing some collaborations or something in the future, having some guests. It was a good time. The excitement to get to more positive things was absolutely palpable. The positivity, the just the stark juxtaposition between the two conventions, the Republican National Convention and the Democrats, it was just bananas how different it is. The patriotism and the literal flag waving that was on display at the Democratic National Convention is so good to see. It takes the wind out of the sails of the right and Republicans that they have some monopoly on patriotism with their fake-triotism bullshit. It was just absolutely fantastic. And Kamala Harris delivered just a barnstorming, amazing acceptance speech, laying out the groundwork for what she envisions for a term as President of the United States with her and Tim Walz. Just fucking phenomenal. Very excited about the future.
Yeah. Are we supposed to stay positive?
No, I mean, I expect that we're going to get to some things that she failed on in her speech. But I'm just, the overarching was positive. But she blew it, as far as I'm concerned, on the Israel-Gaza stuff. Really leaning into things that need to be talked about. But then having, like, listen, when you write speeches, there's a way with a talented speechwriter, which I'm sure she has a team of, to weave the narrative of Israel and the hostage taking with the Gaza situation and the absolute, unequivocal, inarguable, self-evident genocide that's taking place. But she instead talked specifically about Israel and Israel's right to defend itself, which it does have, and her commitment to ensure that they always have what they need to defend themselves. The problem is, they're not just defending themselves, they're eradicating a population that has a right to self-determination, and they're using American munitions to do so. And so I think they failed in that moment. And it's very disappointing.
Yeah, I think the speech was obviously designed to target moderates and the Republicans that may come over and vote for Kamala Harris. I don't think it was targeted for progressives. I don't think that that was the vibe of the speech. I think it was definitely for those types. And when she said we needed to have the most lethal military in the world, I've seen commentary online where people are like, I don't want to have the most lethal military. I just want to go to the doctor.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, it is obviously we want the strongest military. I mean, you do. You want the strongest because you want to be you don't want to be able to be bested by another adversary. However, our military is funded at a rate which is 8 to 10 times more than the following eight nations, like China, Russia, Israel, Great Britain, France, all of the developed nations that people talk about being military powers. We spend more on our military than all of them combined. We could half the budget of our military and still have the most deadly, lethal force on the planet.
Right, yeah. So a lot of those things, I think, missed the mark for me. Also, while I was sitting there listening to it, I'm realizing that it's not designed for me, and I understand the game of politics,
yeah.
Where, and this is why I think some people are disillusioned by the process, because they want a purity test, and they want someone who is progressive through and through and will not try to even appeal to moderate voters or Republicans who are thinking of coming over. And listen, during the DNC, I was like, there are so many former and current Republicans who are on this stage speaking. Every night, there was a former or current Republican who's now voting for Kamala Harris.
Yeah, Jeff Duncan, the former lieutenant governor of Georgia, who is not even former Republican. He is now, he opened his speech by saying, let's get it out of the way, I'm a Republican.
And they cheered for him.
Yeah, but to save our democracy, I'm going to vote for Kamala Harris.
Yeah, and I don't like it as much. You have made the point that it's important to do again, and so I guess maybe it's an inconsistent thing about me that I'm...
No. I don't like it either. I just understand the efficacy of it. And
okay.
I value the fact that in order to save the democracy, we need to do shit that might be distasteful,
right.
Like platforming people who believe abortion is murder and shit. It's just idiots.
Yeah.
Idiot ideas.
It was also a lot of cops. A lot of cops got a lot of speaking time, a lot of cheering from the crowd, which was disturbing.
Also a lot of the grifter class of Republicans, like who's the woman who's the former press secretary for Clinton?
Stephanie Grisham.
Stephanie Grisham. That Olivia Troy, all of these people who are now enriching themselves by being anti-Trump, I don't like them. But if they secure some Republican votes for Kamala and in the process save democracy, which Donald Trump is attempting to end, then that is for good.
Uh-huh.
And I can get over myself and my preciousness about it and do what's right for the country.
Yeah, for sure. And with that, the media... Speaking of traditional media, they could really benefit from fact-checking, improving their fact-checking abilities. And you did a great video on this from the DNC related to, I think, the Washington Post's fact-checking during the DNC.
Unbelievable.
And there was actually, this is an article from July, so this wasn't related to the DNC, but USA Today fact-checked a claim that said Project 2025 is a plan from Trump, and they rated this false. And I want to read you why they rated it false. And this is really a great illustration of what the hell is the media doing right now. So this is what they said. Project 2025 is a political playbook created by the Heritage Foundation and dozens of other conservative groups, not Trump, who said he disagrees with elements of the effort. There are, however, numerous people involved in Project 2025 who worked in Trump's first administration.
So they're taking Donald Trump at his word when he says, I don't even know what Project 25 is. What the hell is this? Oh, he said it. It must be true. That's what they're relying on, is the statements of Donald Trump testing the veracity of the claim that it's Trump's 2025, when he has admitted in previous interviews that he has worked closely with them and they have the best interest of the country. And they have said that Donald Trump is only playing politics when he denies it.
Right. And the president of the Heritage Foundation, Kevin Roberts, has been photographed with Donald Trump, photographed with J.D. Vance. They're close.
J.D. Vance wrote the foreword to his motherfucking book.
Yeah. And the only reason that these denials have started to come out is because people are afraid of Project 2025. And there's been a real push within the Democratic Party. I mean, every speaker, again, each night, every night there was a speaker that brought out a giant book representing Project 2025 to specifically highlight aspects of Project 2025 and tie it directly to Donald Trump and his plans for his administration. So to do all this nonsense parsing, trying to help Donald Trump distance himself when he's only starting to do that because he knows that there's political liabilities associated now with being close to Project 2025 is disturbing. And this is part of the problem with traditional media. A lot of these articles that have talked about the traditional media versus content creators at the DNC have tried to say, well, these content creators have no allegiance to journalistic principles because they're not journalists. So they're biased, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, okay, Brett Baer goes to Mar-a-Lago and he's moderating debates. You have Jake Tapper says things about Israel all the time on CNN that are opinion-based and not based in fact. There are all kinds of examples with these journalists that are exhibiting a departure from these journalistic principles that they're writing about.
Including, and sometimes this, the passivity is the problem, like meaning passiveness. Like when Jake Tapper interviews J.D. Vance, and J.D. Vance says insane shit that's easily pushed back on, and it's silence. It's just moving on to the next question.
Right.
That's a failure and heavy lifting for the Trump campaign as well.
Absolutely, yeah. It's free airtime. It's him getting out his messages with zero pushback.
Yeah.
And there was another controversy at the DNC, and that surrounded the uncommitted delegates. There are 30 uncommitted delegates at the DNC that were representing the hundreds of thousands of people that are voting uncommitted to illustrate that they want more to be done when it comes to Gaza, when it comes to Israel, the arms embargo they're pushing for. They don't want to fund these. What's the death toll up to now? I think 40, it's over 40,000.
Yeah.
Right. And so the delegates with the uncommitted movement at the DNC, they were pushing leadership to allow a Palestinian American speaker or a doctor who has volunteered in Gaza to speak on the stage. They wanted there to be representation. And so the uncommitted movement had even offered up a speaker and said, this is who we would have speak, and even provided the speech that that speaker would give. And this was specifically Georgia State Representative Ruwa Roman, a Palestinian American and Democrat. And
so, elected leader in the party.
Right. And there was a protest right outside the United Center, which is where the Democratic National Convention was taking place every day. And they had given a deadline on the final night of the DNC to say, if by 6 p.m. you should let us speak. And
by the way, the protest was elected delegates, these uncommitted delegates, not riffraff. These people were a part of the process, have credentials to be on the floor of the convention center. They were not randoms, and they were denied.
Right. And so to get just kind of a flavor of what the speech would have been about, we're going to link to it in the show notes as well. But I want you to hear directly from her. She made an appearance on Chris Hayes to talk about what she would have said had she been allowed to speak, which she was not.
You were willing to go up there. I want to just read from the part of the speech that's okay with you, because you said this in the speech that you released. You said, let's commit to each other to electing Vice President Harris and defeating Donald Trump, who uses my identity as a Palestinian as a slur. Let's fight for the policies long overdue, from restoring access to abortions to ensuring a living wage to demanding an end to reckless war and a ceasefire in Gaza. Did you think there was a chance that this would happen?
Yeah, I mean, from my understanding, Uncommitted was told that as long as they were not told no, there was a good chance this was going to happen. And so they were asked to submit names, and this has been going on for a while. This did not start, you know, this week. These negotiations had been ongoing. And from my understanding, I was basically, myself and actually Representative Abdel Nasser, who's also a Palestinian in Illinois, we were kind of pushed as, okay, you're elected officials, you're Palestinian, surely we can at least focus on the two of you out of the list of many people that were already submitted. And we were already on that list to begin with, but it was just one of those, let's focus on them. And we still don't understand why there wasn't a speaking slot for any Palestinian. To be clear, it didn't have to be me. It didn't have to be Representative Abdel Nasser. It could have been any Palestinian, and there wasn't a single one.
One of the aspects of this that I found a little confounding about that, too, and again, like, conventions and candidates are going to enforce the discipline of what they want to say, and that is how this all works. But at this point, it does seem to me that both the bulk of the hostages' families, both American and Israeli, the bulk of the Israeli public, if you believe polling, the bulk of the Israeli security establishment, according to much reporting in Haaretz and other places, the bulk of Palestinian Americans all kind of want the same thing, which is the levers to produce a ceasefire deal.
Yeah, we had organizations, I mean, so many organizations, from Bend the Arc to, you know, obviously Uncommitted was pushing for this. We also had members of Congress request this publicly and privately, including Representative Rashida Tlaib, Representative Cori Bush, Representative Ilhan Omar. But also, you know, we had folks like AOC and others who were pushing and saying, why is there not a single Palestinian speaker? And again, the ask wasn't sort of, we want anything special or different. The idea was, if this is going to be a big tent, can we please make sure it includes everybody that we are trying to reach this year?
And what's wrong with that? Look, this is the other thing that bothers me about all the criticism about creators and objectivity, is we criticize the party, we criticize the candidates when necessary. We are not just the Democrat message machine. We're not fed lines that we repeat. When we disagree, when we fundamentally have ideological differences, we speak to that. And this is one moment where it needs to be talked about. And look, we know that there's a portion of the audience that disagrees. We know that there's a portion of the audience that does agree. That's not how we operate. You know, reasonable people can disagree agreeably about topics of importance, and this is one of them. And I truly believe that the Democratic Party and also the campaign, they failed in this moment. They should have extended an arm, and it would have gone a long way toward winning the election, especially with battleground states that are tipsy-turvy on the precipice, like Michigan.
Right. And that's the important point, right, is that it would have sent an important message. It would have been beneficial in the election, even aside from it being the right thing to do. I mean, if you care about winning the election, it would have been the right thing to do to win the election. I still feel, and maybe we'll end it on a positive note, of obviously we have a good ticket in Kamala Harris and Tim Walz.
Yes.
And I feel like going into November, we're in a strong position. I think it would have made us stronger to have a Palestinian-American speaker be allowed on the stage. They did not choose to do that. We know what we're facing in November still. And this is not over. It's not as though it's just smooth sailing from here. No, we need to work. We need to continue to work to try to convince people to ensure that they are, you know, check your voter registration status. Make sure you are registered to vote.
Yeah.
Early voting is starting in about, I think, 10 days in some states.
Yeah. Also, if you're in states like Georgia, you need to check, because they have this weird new mechanism where you can cancel your registration online, but that also means someone else can do that too. And they don't need a bunch of super personal information. Check. Make sure you're registered no matter what state you're in. We need every single vote.
And like Jesse always says, we're using our small corner of the internet to try to educate people, to try to push people. And still, this isn't a show where we are uncritical, where we take the Democratic talking points and we just repeat them. No, we're going to have criticism because we want the party to be as strong as possible to be able to beat Donald Trump. That's the goal.
And by virtue of that, the country will be stronger.
Right. It's not to weaken the party. It's not to weaken the candidates. It's not to attack the candidates. It's to make the party stronger so that we can beat Donald Trump.
Exerting pressure on political leaders is how change occurs.
Right.
And that's what we're here for. Anyway, we'd love to know what you think. If you have other questions, we could certainly address some other questions about the DNC. We did have a good time. Overall, it was a positive experience. And we'd love to hear from you. 657-464-7609. And of course, as always, you can email a voice memo from your smartphone to idoubtit@dollamore.com.
So we want to thank our Patreon supporters. I just want to say one thing before we do that, though. I feel like our whole conversation could best be summed up that when we would get in our Ubers, we would be asked, are you guys having a good time at the convention? And we would always be so tired and be like, we're here working, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't think it was designed for us to have fun because we were working. And so I'm hoping that it's not coming across like we're not grateful, because we're very grateful. Again, we feel so lucky to have had the experience. But
I still haven't caught up in sleep.
Right.
It was
all day, every day. We were trying to get stuff done. So it was
We
difficult.
Didn't attend any glitzy, glammy after party. Not yeah, a single one. And there
any.
Were all kinds of them. A Funny or Die after party we were invited to.
Yeah.
We didn't do any of that stuff and still didn't get to bed till like 1 a.m. every night.
Yeah. So, yeah. So anyway.
No wonder you have fucking COVID.
All right, so we want to thank our Patreon supporters, because without your support, we would not be able to do the show.
We would not be able to go to bed at 1 a.m. after working so hard.
And we would not be able to go to things like the DNC,
yeah,
which was a great experience. Lessons learned for next time about how to improve and ensure that we can get our work done. So thank you to our new Patreon supporters. For Snapdragon. Diane.
Diane. Creepy has stuff to say.
I think this is TR and TS.
TR and TS.
John F. Dave. Dion C.
Dion C.
Lee B.
Dina.
Clinton D. Chris H. Charles S. Defiant L. AC Count 2. Lauren M. Bob S. Bijan K. Carla C. Stuart W.
Thank you very much.
Maria G. Greg G. Lance H.
Vanessa.
Mildred A.
Thank you, Mildred.
Phil G. Chad W. Christopher K.
Andrew W.
Jeff K.
Unknown M.
Galen W.
Bonnie P.
Kamsath M. His Zotness.
Don M.
Frank D.
Ellie M.
Tom.
And Psalm.
And then we want to give a special shout out to our current Patreon supporters who have increased their pledges, and that would be Will E.
Kevin M.
And Bear N.
Thank you all so very much. With your help, we're able to produce this show, as well as it helps in production of both of our YouTube channels and everything we do, travel. We have big plans in this coming year, even actually before the election. There are a couple trips I want to make and do some interviewing at rallies and things like that. And it's only with your help that we're able to do that. So thank you very much. Patreon.com/IDoubtItPodcast.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Stalemocracy. Facing down pessimistic politics with realistic optimism.
So Donald Trump has been making a lot of mistakes, and his team has been rallying around him, trying to protect him from those mistakes.
I think it's because he's rattled. I think he's very rattled, hasn't found his footing. Nothing is sticking relative to battling against the candidacy of Kamala Harris. They're just without fucking answers.
Yeah, I think that he is nervous, especially regarding this new reporting surrounding the debate that's coming up September 10th. And
well, he just bowed out of it last night at 10:07 p.m. on Truth Social.
Oh, I thought he just kind of hinted that he... I didn't know that he officially said...
He did it in his Trump way, but it seems like it's off.
Well, and the main contention, I guess, is the muted mic situation. And this was interesting to me because I've always been pro mute the mics. I feel like the debate is pointless if you're not muting the mic. And
that's because we're people who want information. We want to hear about policy. And then this is another situation where Kamala Harris, apparently, and the campaign, they don't want it muted because they want to show just what kind of a fucking idiot Donald Trump is.
Apparently also because, and I've listened to a few of these mashups, she has been able to create viral moments in the past when someone is talking over her, like Mike Pence talking over her. And she will say, I'm speaking right now. Are you going to allow me to speak?
During the debates in 2020.
Right. And so there's been some speculation that she wants to create those moments again, but with Donald Trump, where she's demanding her time to speak.
Well, those videos that they played on the giant screen in the convention center of her questioning Bill Barr, Jeff Sessions, Brett Kavanaugh, they were banger, zippy little edited videos that really show she is a force to be reckoned with relative to her questioning, relative to her ability to be forceful. And they were great. So if that's what they're going for, I understand. But as a consumer of information, I want the information.
Yeah. So like I said, I planned this show before we went to the DNC, and I decided to just keep a lot of my clips that we were going to talk about. So... it's not me phoning it in, but you guys, I have COVID. I don't know if you know. So you should feel bad for me and you should give me some credit, okay? So, like I said, Donald Trump has been making mistakes. One mistake that he made is, again, attacking veterans, and specifically with his Medal of Freedom versus Medal of Honor comments, where he acted as though getting the Medal of Freedom is better because you are alive and you are like beautiful still, alluding to like not being harmed in war.
Yeah. And you didn't have to struggle to get it.
Right. Yes.
Just bananas.
So just very insensitive, very insulting, but also illustrating exactly how he feels about people who have courage and people who make sacrifices on behalf of other people.
Also, he said it in a speech where he was talking about Miriam Adelson, who donated in this cycle nearly $100 million to the reelection effort of Donald Trump. So it obviously pay-to-play kind of a situation. Donald Trump, the list of people he gave the Presidential Medal of Freedom to includes fucking Rush Limbaugh, Jim Jordan, Devin Nunes, and then a series of athletes like Tiger Woods and Jerry West, and athletes, not scientists and people who have actually done something to further... our compendium of knowledge and peace in the world.
Right. So the governor of New Hampshire, Chris Sununu, who had originally endorsed Nikki Haley in the Republican primary and now is backing Donald Trump.
Of course he is.
Is absolutely shameless in his exchange with Jake Tapper here on this issue, reacting to Donald Trump's comments about the Medal of Freedom and the Medal of Honor.
President Trump compared giving the Presidential Medal of Freedom to top Republican donor Miriam Adelson, to giving the Medal of Honor to American service members who risked their lives in battle. Take a listen.
It's actually much better because everyone gets the Congressional Medal of Honor. That's soldiers. They're either in very bad shape because they've been hit so many times by bullets, or they're dead. She gets it, and she's a healthy, beautiful woman. It's right. And they're rated equal.
The head of the VFW, Veterans of Foreign Wars, said, quote, "These asinine comments not only diminish the significance of our nation's highest award for valor, but also crassly characterizes the sacrifices of those who have risked their lives above and beyond the call of duty," unquote. Do you agree with the VFW?
Yeah, there were asinine comments. There's no doubt about that. Again, I don't think they're the first asinine comments former President Trump has ever made. I don't think they'll be a game changer in terms of the election. When you're talking about, you know, what it takes for someone to stand up and protect this country, it's uncomparable, I think, right? It stands alone in its own lane in terms of the honor, you know, especially when you're talking about the Congressional Medal of Honor. What Trump needs to be focusing on, if he ever brings up the military, is what it takes to keep America strong across the world, how to bring world peace in you know, dangerous places like the Ukraine and what's going on in Israel, in the Middle East. These things get solved, if you will, with America's strength, and that only happens because of America's brave soldiers and servicemen that are willing to protect and kind of, you know, make sure the American way of life is established across the country, and our allies know that they can count on that. So to make these types of comparisons is so far afield. I don't think it's going to be a big politically in terms of moving votes. He said crazy things like this before. At the end of the day, he's got to just focus on what Americans are feeling, which is the economy, the stresses, the border crisis, the migrant crisis. And he's going to have a great opportunity, right?
So you heard Chris Sununu say there that they are asinine comments. That's what he's saying about Donald Trump's comments. Then he says they weren't the first asinine comments that he's ever made.
Yeah.
And they won't be a game changer. How, I wonder why they won't be a game changer, Chris Sununu. Is it because Republicans like you will tolerate anything and have zero criticism and continue to support him no matter how asinine the comments are?
Or damaging or disrespectful to the people that they claim to wave their flags around for.
Right.
I've got a theory, if you'll indulge.
All right.
So Donald Trump, during the speech, calls it the Presidential Medal of Freedom, which is what it is, and then kept referring to the Medal of Honor as the Congressional Medal of Honor, which is common but incorrect. It's not the Congressional Medal of Honor. And I think Donald Trump might be such a dumb fuck that he thinks it's the Presidential Medal of Freedom, so it's more important and better than the Congressional Medal of Honor.
Oh, interesting. So this is like an asylum thing, too.
Yeah.
Like, they think that he keeps talking about Hannibal Lecter because he thinks when the border conversation comes up about seeking asylum, migrants seeking asylum, that he thinks they're talking about mental hospitals.
Yeah, insane asylums, like from the 50s.
Yeah. Someone should really ask him that, by the way. Like, can we get to the bottom of why he's always talking about Hannibal Lecter? Is that why? I really would like to know.
Very weird.
Yeah.
And we'd love to know what you think about it. Again, 657-464-7609. I doubt it. At dollamore.com.
So on the note of Project 2025, there was this recent hidden camera video that came out.
Remarkable.
And it is surrounding the Project 2025's co-author, Russell Vogt. It looks like his name is Vogt, by the way.
I know, just like the boys.
Yeah, but apparently in this clip, King Law from CNN pronounces it Vogt. So is he doing that intentionally? Because he's like, oh my God, we can't have the boys on our case either. This is not good.
Yeah.
So this is hidden camera
footage.
Let's
just go with Vogt. I like Vogt. Russell Vogt.
Where he's talking about Project 2025's policy blueprint, and he's meeting with people that he thinks are his allies, but one is an actor and one is from the organization that did the hidden camera footage. And they gave it to CNN only under the condition that CNN would blur their faces so that they can continue to do undercover work like this,
yeah,
where they're recording
great.
Them and they don't know. Now, of course, Russell Vought also worked in Donald Trump's administration. So in this video, you're going to hear...
And he had such a prominent role. He has done press conferences from the White House press briefing room. Like, he was a big wig, not just some random staffer stuffed away in the West Wing.
Right. So in between the hidden camera footage, you're going to be hearing King Law from CNN narrating, and she's another great reporter. So here is Russell Vought, hidden camera footage, discussing the policy blueprint for Project 2025.
Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name.
You are looking at secretly recorded video of Russell Vought, a former cabinet member in the Trump administration.
This year has been predominantly now getting ready for a year five of a Trump administration. We have about 350 different documents that are regulations and things of that nature.
Vought, the platform policy director for the Republican National Committee, says he is building the plan for Trump's second term.
I don't know what the hell it is. It's Project 25.
Trump publicly disavowed Project 2025, a conservative blueprint for his administration if he gets reelected. But in private, Vought said that's just politics. The details of the real plans are secret and based on Trump's own beliefs.
Notwithstanding, I expect you to hear 10 more times from the rally, the president, you know, distancing himself from the left's boogeyman at Project 2025.
Yeah. And you're not worried about that?
I'm not worried about it. And so I see what he's doing is just very, very conscious distancing himself from a brand. He's very supportive of what we do. And know that we have an all manner of things that we do that's, you know, even unrelated to Project 2025.
Sure.
Vought has been a mastermind behind expanding the powers of the presidency. Some of those policy proposals Trump has supported, two sources tell CNN. Trump even hosted a Mar-a-Lago fundraiser 2 years ago for the group Vought founded, the right-wing Center for Renewing America.
He's been at our organization. He's raised money for our organization. He's blessed it.
In this hotel suite, Vought thinks he's talking to family members of a wealthy donor. But one is a journalist, the other an actor, working undercover for the UK-based Center for Climate Reporting. The center provided the video to CNN on the condition we blur their faces so they can continue their undercover work. The conversation covers a host of issues, like abortion and how his position differs from Trump.
He talks about rape, incest, and life. The mother, well, I don't actually believe in those exceptions. I want to get to abolition, but I also, we got to win elections. Mm. And so I want to get as far as we possibly can.
His view of who should be an American.
So I want to make sure that we can say we're a Christian nation. And my viewpoint is mostly that I would probably be Christian nationism. Mm. That's pretty close to Christian nationalism. Can we... If we're going to have legal immigration, can we get people that actually believe in Christianity? Is that something? Or do we have to have, you know, are we not allowed to have ask questions about Sharia law?
What could we see America looking like, I guess, in an ideal world?
In an ideal world, I mean, I think we could save the country in a sense of, the largest deportation in history.
And even pornography.
We'd have a national ban on pornography if we could, right?
Bananas. Abs, and you heard all of that. He's talking about, oh yeah, that's just politics. You're going to hear him deny us and disavow us a million more times, whatever. And then going into justifying white Christian nationalism. It's just, these are the people. And behind closed doors, they're saying things that they don't say in public, but they absolutely fundamentally believe they want to structurally change our culture and our country.
Right. And he even went so far as to illustrate how he views Donald Trump's denials. He said, I see what he's doing as conscious distancing himself from the brand. We know he's supportive and we have all manner of things we do unrelated to Project 2025.
Yeah.
So he's saying their core values are aligned.
Yeah.
They are aligned in terms of their goals. Whether or not you want to identify it by the brand Project 2025, Donald Trump doesn't publicly want to be involved with that. But in terms of our ideas and what our goals are, Donald Trump is on board. And in another way, too, this Vought said, Vought, however we're going to pronounce it, Russell Vought, He also said that he wants abolition of abortion, but he says we need to win elections. You know who else has said that multiple times in public? I've played it multiple times in my video.
Donald Trump.
Donald Trump always says that he understands people have their views on abortion, but we need to win elections.
Yeah.
So that's a message to the anti-abortion activists who feel that Donald Trump is not signaling enough to them that he's going to enact bans on abortion through the Comstock Act, which would prevent abortion pills from being mailed, or enact a federal abortion ban. Those are things that the anti-abortion movement, this Russell Vought, who wants to see abolition of abortion, those are the things that they want to see. Donald Trump is telling them, I can't communicate that publicly right now because we need to win elections.
Right, but once I'm elected and there's not a third term coming, I'll do what I want to do.
Right.
Yeah, the other thing that people need to think about is think about the stranglehold that Donald Trump has on the Republican Party. Do you think that there are these sycophants who are going to be out there organizing and conniving and scheming behind his back? No. They're doing it in full view of the Trump campaign, of Donald Trump. They have his blessing without a fucking doubt. So all of these journalists who are hand-wringing and like, no, but he said what Donald Trump said is, come on, let's stop taking Donald Trump at whatever he says and put the pieces together and look at reality through a reality lens.
Right. And just another brief clip here. The hidden camera continues. And this is specifically with Russell Vought saying, discussing what the plans are in Project 2025 for expanding presidential powers.
George Floyd obviously was not about race. It was about destabilizing the Trump administration.
Right.
It's the left's belief that structures in society are the problem. Pulling society down for purposes of revolution is exactly what they want. And what you're seeing in college campuses is a part of that as well. The president has, you know, the ability both along the border and elsewhere to maintain law and order with the military.
A major part of Vought's plan is turning thousands of career federal jobs into political appointments, meaning workers could be fired if they're not sufficiently loyal to Trump.
80% of my time is working on the plans of what's necessary to take control of these bureaucracies. I want to be the person that crushes the deep state. I think there's a lot of different ways to do that. It is defunding it. It's impoundment, the ability to not spend money. Yeah. It's getting rid of their independence.
Even as Vought talks about the so-called deep state, he claims his group is forming its own to take over on day one.
We are trying to create a shadow Office of Management and Budget, a shadow National Security Council, and a shadow Office of Legal Counsel. Yeah. These are the main organs in government that you need outside to create the battle plan.
And you're not going to publish those?
No. No.
They go straight to them.
Yeah, they're very, very close to home.
So he's admitting he wants to replace the quote-unquote deep state with a literal fucking deep state. Scary. Absolutely dystopian type of shit here.
Yeah, it's scary. And again, there's so much information every single day that I feel like this somewhat flew under the radar. We've certainly already moved on with the DNC, but stuff like this really needs to stay front and center.
Yeah.
And if you have people in your life that are on the fence or that you've been wanting to talk to, that you feel like are malleable, that you feel like you could change their mind, you could swing them from maybe even not voting to voting for Kamala Harris. It's stuff like this that may convince them that it is scary what we're facing if Donald Trump gets into power again.
Yeah. We'd love to hear from you on this. Very important stuff. 657-464-7609. And of course, as always, you can email us. idoubtit@dollamore.com.
It's the asshole of today.
Judge Kenneth King is our asshole of today.
Yes, he is. And there have been additional developments in this story since I first put it on the board. So I'm glad that
we
got delayed.
Yeah, yeah.
But he is a judge who had a teenager in his courtroom.
Not as a defendant, though. They were on like a field trip.
Yes, and this was in Michigan, and there was a 15-year-old student who was visiting the courtroom with a nonprofit group, and she fell asleep. And he decided to stand her up and berate her in the courtroom for falling asleep, and actually sent her to the court's jail cell and put her in handcuffs. She was told to disrobe and change into a jail jumpsuit and sit alone. And
arrogant fucking judges, man.
Yeah, it's a horrible story, and it actually gets worse when you learn that the reason that this young teenage girl was falling asleep in the courtroom is because she's homeless and has been enduring such instability in her personal life that she's not been sleeping very well.
Why have you been disrespectful to this court?
What was supposed to be a field trip to a Detroit courtroom Tuesday ended up traumatizing a Michigan teen, according to her mother.
You sleep at home in your bed, not in court. Quite frankly, I don't like your attitude.
District Court Judge Kenneth King admonishing 15-year-old Eva Goodman after she fell asleep in his courtroom. He then forced her into handcuffs and a prison jumpsuit. Eva's mother outraged and planning to press charges.
Yeah, she was having trouble sleeping, eating.
A live stream of that court hearing was recorded and then broadcast by local news outlets.
You're old enough to know better. What is your problem?
Tired because Eva and her mom don't have a permanent address and say they got in late the night before the field trip organized by a nonprofit summer program.
She's still having like problems with understanding, like, why would he do that to her?
The judge, who says he's since received violent threats, removed from his criminal case docket as he undergoes, quote, necessary training, according to the court's chief judge. Wayne State University also tells NBC News he's been removed from teaching classes there. Judge King declined to comment to NBC News, but told local media his reaction was because of Eva's attitude and told the Associated Press, I wanted this to look and feel very real to her.
She didn't disrespect the court or your honor in the courtroom. Falling asleep is not a crime.
Now, Eva's mother has hired a lawyer who tells me those charges they intend to file will include intentional infliction of emotional distress, false arrest, and false imprisonment. We could see those filed as soon as Monday.
I'm looking through my imaginary book of U.S. code here, the criminal code, and I'm having a real hard time finding where you can criminalize having a bad attitude.
Right.
Where children can be imprisoned, can be handcuffed, can be put in a cell because they have a quote-unquote bad attitude, and the attitude is just she's tired because of instability and homelessness.
Right. I was going to say, does she have a bad attitude, or did she fall asleep, and you are considering that disrespect?
Yeah, absolutely.
Judge Kenneth King. So this is wildly disturbing. Even in that news package, they said that she doesn't have a permanent address. That means she's homeless.
Yeah.
They have been cycling through different places to stay. She doesn't have a permanent place to stay, and she's been under a lot of stress and pressure because she's homeless. So when he told her, you sleep at home in your bed, I really hope there's a moment of reflection for this judge that we don't know what people are going through. I mean, you have these sayings, right, that you never know what people are going through and you should treat them with kindness, but especially in a courtroom where a kid is falling asleep, leaping immediately to the fact that this must be some sort of personal slight against you, rather than thinking about what might be going on with this kid.
Yeah.
And saying to her that she sleeps at home in her bed when she doesn't have that.
Yeah.
She doesn't have that right now in her life. And as far as I know, this guy, this judge, he is not remorseful. He's still maintaining that he hasn't been disrespected like that in a very long time.
Right, because it's about him.
But the teenager's family has filed a lawsuit. They're accusing him of violating her civil rights. And I am very happy that they are doing that because this guy seems to be a problem. There's another article here that I found in the Detroit Free Press, and this is from 2 days ago. Evidently, he puts his cases, he live streams them on YouTube. And they've actually found that he engages with people in the comments, in the live comments. And there's a case that they're specifically referring to.
While working, while being a judge?
Oh, yeah. So it starts by saying, when 11-year-old twin girls took the stand to testify, their father sexually abused them. Commenters flooded the chat in 36th District Court Judge Kenneth King's YouTube live stream. First of all, why is this a YouTube live stream?
Right.
Why are you
this
doing
this particular case, especially children?
When the commenters began getting confused, asking questions about how the litany of witnesses were related, King appeared to start typing. He started answering their questions.
What a dipshit.
In the YouTube live stream,
right,
of his court case. And apparently there were times where he missed interactions, like a lawyer's objection, because he was monitoring the online chat.
Wow. Shouldn't be a judge. Should have not have authority over other people's lives and be able to determine and adjudicate their cases.
Is that disrespectful, by the way? Is that disrespectful to those twin girls who are testifying?
Right.
Those twin babies who are testifying about how their father abused them? That seems disrespectful.
You know, the other thing is, a lot of the people on the right I've seen who are like, well, she shouldn't have fallen asleep. She should have shown some respect. The same people who will defend Donald Trump falling the fuck asleep as a defendant in his criminal trial over and over and over and over in New York City. Fuck off. Absolutely. Anyway, I guess we'll invite comments on this. 657-464-7609. And of course, as always, you can email idoubtit@dollamore.com. We are going to wrap with some good news.
Taking care of biz. This is Jane Verhelst. Jane Verhelst, she's a bus driver in Minnesota, and this is one of these good news stories from CBS. They have a reporter there, and I am blanking on his name right now. I will get it by the end of the clip.
Is that because you planned the show so long ago?
No, it's because I have COVID, and everyone should feel bad for me that I have COVID. So it's my card right
now. You're the one taking care of biz by working while sick.
Exactly. So this is a beautiful story. I was actually playing it on my phone, and we were both sitting in the living room, and you weren't watching it. I was just playing it, kind of looking for clips. And I'm bawling, and then I look over and you're like, we're playing that on the show, right? And you're crying. Yeah. So just a warning that if you are somewhere, if you're listening to this at work with your headphones, just kind of prepare yourself, I guess.
Nothing gets past Minneapolis bus driver Jane Arndt Verhelst. Tire pressure, seats clean, all systems go. But recently, Jane noticed a problem outside her bus. It was about a month ago. She was approaching this intersection when she saw a woman standing in the middle of the road.
And then when I opened up the door, that's when I really saw her. I saw her from head to toe, and I was just like, wow.
The woman, who appeared to be homeless, wasn't wearing any shoes.
I can't imagine what it's like walking around in bare feet on the hot pavement and just nobody sees you. She's just kind of invisible, you know?
But not to Jane, who immediately took the shoes off her own feet and gave them to her.
I knew that you're not supposed to drive in your socks. It's a big no-no. But I couldn't help it.
Several riders witnessed that moment, but perhaps no one was more touched by it than this woman. Sarah Selden had been homeless before. She knows how meaningful a simple kindness can be.
It really, like, affected me because, like, it was like, oh my gosh, she sees this woman.
We're often told to put ourselves in someone else's shoes. But in certain moments, it's almost more important to let that someone stand in ours. Steve Hartman, On the Road, in St. Paul, Minnesota.
So it's Steve Hartman is, you heard his name there.
Yeah,
he said it
yeah.
himself. But just
more of this.
Yeah, just a beautiful story. And it shows that we can, all of us, take time to help other people. And it reminds me of something I read this morning, actually. I was reading a Vox article by Rachel Cohen, and she does a lot of reporting on homelessness. And the title of the article is Why I Changed My Mind About Volunteering. My generation was taught to change the system. That lesson came at a cost. And I talk a lot about how the reason that I am a therapist who talks about politics is because I've really, in my work, seen the limitations of individual solutions for systemic problems.
Yeah.
And that I believe I can't separate my work helping individuals from my work to try to help change the system. But I think some people focus too much sometimes on the systemic changes that need to occur and forget that there are actual individual actions that they themselves can be taking.
Yeah.
And so she writes in this article about volunteering your time with organizations or going and buying hand warmers and passing them out to people who are on the street that you pass by that you know are there. Bottles of water, snacks, different things. Don't wait for an organization to do those kinds of things. We can be doing those kinds of things while at the same time doing the very necessary and important work to change the system.
Yeah. I think that there is something for sure to be said about if everyone were to engage in a selfless act of kindness on a daily basis or whenever the opportunity arises, the world would just be so much better. It just really would. Anyway, we're going to end it there. We love you guys. We would invite your engagement, 657-464-7609. And, of course, you can email a voice memo from your smartphone to idoubtit@dollamore.com. We would ask that you consider to help support our work if you have the financial means. $2 a month. Go to patreon.com/idoubtitpodcast. We love and appreciate every single one of you. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for your listenership and your loyalty. And we will see you next time. For Brittany Page, I am Jesse Dollamore, and this has been I Doubt It.